Before we begin today, I have something I need to say. Since the beginning of time, partnership has always been based on trust. And a month ago, Bobby agreed to play a video game for our podcast.
Oh my God.
And said that he would have it done in a month. And then I wanted to pretend like I have a written statement out. No, shut up. But everyone needs to hear this because this is important. Bobby promised that he would play this video game, and I said, no, it's too long. We don't have to do that. And he said, no, I'll get it done. It's important, and I understand that it's important, so I'll get it done. This is my responsibility. And I felt like he understood the responsibility and accepted it, so I said, okay. Cut to a month later. We don't have a new podcast out. And I'm getting texts from friends that say things like, hey man, where's the new podcast? Or, it's been a month, are you guys not doing the podcast anymore? What happened was, Bobby didn't play the game. How much of Last of Us have you played?
Listen, you have no proof that you ever asked me to record, to
play this. Well, let's talk about trust, because the reason I have no proof is that 2 weeks ago, as a kind of olive branch to get the show back on the road, I reached out to Bobby and said, hey, Bobby, do you need to re-record the ending so we take out the part where you're agreeing to play this video game? And Bobby said, yes, that is what I need. And so I want to make an announcement today to everyone. Because the trust has been destroyed, Bobby's punishment is that For every episode that we do that Bobby does not finish this video game, I refuse to pick anything other than episodes of maybe the best show in the history of television, The Sopranos, which Bobby has never seen. And so this will hopefully teach him some lessons about responsibility, personal accountability, the kinds of things that, Bobby, I think, is sorely lacking. So I just wanted to start the episode off today by talking about this. And, we don't have to, we don't need a rebuttal or anything. So I think we can just move on.
I'm just, that's my punishment is Ian saying he's going to keep assigning me episodes of a television show that he thinks is one of the greatest television shows of all time. My response to that is, Ian, there are two seasons of Riverdale and so many Netflix original romantic comedies available for me to assign you in the meantime.
Hey, if you want to, torture me and not admit your fault in this, that's fine. If that's how you want to go about your response, I understand. I mean, we can't all be as big a person as I am. I get it. So,
whatever it takes, I know we can make it through.
You're wrong with Ian and Bobby. You're wrong.
Hey, buddy, how you doing?
Well, I was doing great. Now I feel kind of terrible.
Full disclosure, I really wanted to do this. I thought I was going to write something out, and then I decided it would be fun if I just did it on the spot. But I have such bad social anxiety that I...
trumping it.
Yeah, exactly. But I have such bad social anxiety that I actually texted you 4 days ago and asked if it was okay with you if I did that. Because I didn't want to be a dick.
And so, the real reality was like, hey, dude, you don't have to play a video game if you want. It's totally okay. I understand if you're too busy.
That's exactly what it is. I mean, here's the thing. The real truth is both of those things are true. I feel bad that I'm asking you to play a 20-hour video game, and I really want you to play it, so.
Yeah. Yeah. So I've been playing video games recently.
Yeah? What have you been playing, asshole?
I got the game Octopath Traveler on the Nintendo
Switch. Yeah, what is this? You were talking about it briefly before.
It's a JRPG from Square Enix.
Okay.
And it's kind of like a throwback to like the 90s Final Fantasy games.
Okay. Based entirely only on the title, I had assumed that it was a sequel to Octodad. I'm not even kidding.
It is not a sequel to Octodad. You at the beginning you have the choice to choose one of 8 travelers, as it were.
Okay.
And then you kind of work your way around. You start on one, you play kind of like their intro story.
Mm-hmm.
And then it highlights the other 7 on your map, and then you can kind of go around and...
So you kind of, pick which path you travel, and there's 8 different paths. There's 8 of them. That's interesting.
Yeah. So it's a very descriptive title. But the art style is really cool. It's, it uses, the 16-bit kind of Super Nintendo sprites.
Yeah.
And the world itself, like the worlds are 3D, but they have kind of the 16-bit textures. Mm-hmm. And so,
oh, that's interesting.
Yeah,
that's
so cool. It's like if you freeze it, it looks like a Super Nintendo game, but the way it moves,
right,
it feels like you're kind of looking at a diorama of a Nintendo game.
That's really interesting.
Yeah.
My favorite game that was done in that style that I think I've played in recent years, you know, something that was a throwback, was I'm a big sucker for beat 'em ups. Mm-hmm. I still go to the arcade by my house and play old, you know, Alien versus Predator and Cadillacs versus Dinosaurs and Metal Slug and all that stuff. I really, 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 really enjoy the Scott Pilgrim.
Oh, it's so game. Good. Yeah. It's really fun.
Yeah, yeah. And that kind of was one of the games that I think really, really matched that nostalgia style well, and also like upgraded it in a way that, it's really weird that we're staring at each other. We should say we're recording in person again, and last time we were kind of sitting at an angle, so we weren't looking at each other. Now we're looking right at each other.
I typically don't maintain eye contact. I know, but I just want to maintain unblinking eye contact the whole time.
That's, I was gonna ask if you were doing this on purpose, because I feel very uncomfortable right now.
I'm drawing hearts in the air too while he's talking.
But yeah, so that's, but okay, cool. I think you sold me on it. That sounds interesting. It's on Switch.
Yeah, it's really fun. I've only played about an hour. Like, I, you know, the, it's weird because the story so far is kind of uneventful.
Okay.
Which is not great for a JRPG, but it's just fun to play.
Okay.
And so, yeah.
Right. I need a new JRPG to kick around. I've been playing a lot of XCOM 2 lately, which is really fun, but, you know, that's kind of, you play that in short bursts, so.
I still haven't played the last XCOM.
It's great.
Yeah.
It's fantastic. It feels like a board game with a video game built into it.
Like Chutes and Ladders?
Yeah, exactly.
Okay. Those Chutes, man, they'll get you.
The problem with us doing this in person is you are giving no verbal indication that you're kidding with half the stuff you say. I'm just putting that out there. Bobby has a big stupid grin on his face. He thinks he's really clever right now.
Have you played Sonic Mania?
No, this is one of the new Sonic games that you were talking to me about a little while ago.
But yes. Yeah, it's the retro throwbacky kind of one.
Okay.
They just released an update for that, like an expansion that adds two new characters and a new game mode, and it's basically a different game.
Is this an app game or is it a real?
No, it's on it's on Switch and PS4 and everything, but it's really great. Okay. I can't get over how great that game is. That game should suck, but it's amazing.
Well, Sonic kind of all is not good compared to what Sonic used to be, so I think we're in agreement on that, right? That Sonic the Hedgehog has lost its way as a franchise a little bit in its time,
specifically when it hit Dreamcast.
Sonic,
whereas Mario knew exactly what it wanted to be when it hit 3D,
right? That next step up, I think Sonic tripped for a couple of years on,
and it's kind of like not what could it have done, really? Because Sonic's whole thing is hold to the right and go really, really fast.
Right. I get that. Sonic also, though, I feel like is has been cursed by the over-licensing thing. Like, I feel like Mario shows up in stuff, but for it to be an actual game, they take it very seriously if they're going to put him in a game. Like, they really, really built up, even though it wasn't anything kind of crazy, the Mario iPhone game for like a long time before it came out, for instance. Sonic, I think they just slap Sonic's name on whatever they feel like, because it's name recognition, and I think they've just eaten up most of their goodwill. This is so boring. Why are we talking about this?
Because
let's talk more about the intricacies of Sonic the Hedgehog. Go ahead, Bobby.
Well, no, I think what Sonic's...
I know you have a lot of thoughts on this.
What Sonic's problem was also was the interpretation of his like personality as soon as you start adding, you know, real...
Right.
Real, you know, like, as soon as things started to get more cinematic, Nintendo made a decision with Mario very early on,
yes,
which is that Mario's good-natured and he doesn't talk.
Yes, that's true. And he doesn't... They didn't try to get into, like, having an attitude or being badass or anything like that. Sonic, I feel like, did the same thing that you and I have been making fun of the new Titans trailer for.
Yes.
For the last 2 weeks, which is it tried to grow up at the same rate as its fans, and I think got very silly because of it.
Not too long ago, Sonic introduced a Dark Sonic who had hover shoes and...
And guns, right? Didn't he have pistols?
Well, he didn't start out that way. Shadow the Hedgehog was the brooding emo Sonic counterpart.
Right.
And when people reacted kind of ho-hum to them, they doubled down on that and gave him a game where they give him double pistols and a love story with a human.
I didn't know that part.
It's weird.
That's incredible.
Yeah.
The other big thing, other than Sopranos, that I've been doing lately is I actually do want to talk about this for a little bit. I play a lot of freemium games, which, you know, are the free phone games that you kind of, you know, whatever. And I go through bursts of liking some of them. I think I'm playing one that I really enjoy more than any other one I've played right now, which I texted you about. It's the South Park app game. It's really good.
Yeah, it's pretty fun.
It's, so first off, the story is good. I like that about it a lot. I think it's funny the way it's developed. It's very meta because it's South Park and it's about, you know, being the new kid in town and everybody's playing this game on their phones and you do it too. So whenever, but you're playing it on your phone. So whenever anybody talks to you, it looks like text message bubbles. Whenever they have cutscenes, you get a call from one of the characters that you have to answer and they FaceTime you. So that stuff's all fun. But then once you get to the grindy part, I feel like, maybe I'm projecting here, but I feel like based on the fact that there was an episode of the show where they make fun of freemium stuff, I think that Matt and Trey or people involved in the process at a high level were making sure that some of that stuff wasn't in there. So for instance, you can just play PvP as long as you want, and it's actually tactically interesting, and you get stuff from it the whole time. There are, you know, like certain things that you don't get after you play for a while, but Oh, the other thing I really like about it, too, is the guilds are literally only there to trade cards. You don't do anything else with the guilds, and so it just feels like a playground where you're trading your duplicates of cards you don't want with other people. I don't know. I just really, really like it. It's the most I have been interested in a freemium game in a really long time, and it's funny.
Yeah, you're definitely further along than I am, but it's fun so far.
Yeah, I'm really into it. It's surprising to me.
You know, it's interesting. Because I know Matt and Trey, I guess, on the show, but also in interviews and stuff, have kind of shat on DLC and freemium stuff.
Yeah.
And, you know, I hadn't thought of it in that the freemium, the pay stuff in this doesn't feel as vital.
No. Go ahead.
No, I was saying I...
It is a freemium game, by the way. To be clear, there are two modes of currency, and one of them you pay money for and one you don't, and you have to kind of grind through stuff. Like, it is a freemium game. It's definitely that.
And I have been very cynical, sort of, and eye-rolled a lot about the fact that there's DLC for Fractured Butthole and that there's now a South Park freemium game.
Right.
It did feel a little bit like way to sell out.
I know, I agree. But it's, I mean, I'm telling you, it's like, so for instance, the events, all the events are, and most games that I play like this, the events are designed so you can get pretty far, but you're going to have to pay money to get like the big guy from that week, the big new card or the big new character or whatever, right? These events are just, they put a bunch of random cards into a list. If you play those cards in your deck, you get points. And once you get enough points, you get all the stuff for that event. So you just play it and get it. Like, you just have to put in more time if you want all this stuff. That's it. And I've never had that with freemium before. I've always had that kind of extra anxiety of like, oh, if I don't, by the end of this month, play this exactly right, I'm not going to get Hawkeye or whatever, that kind of stuff.
I had to cold turkey delete Avengers Academy
for that reason, right? Because every month there's cool new things that you're not going to get unless you spend money. And
I had, like, alarms on my phone reminding me to log in and collect stuff.
And this just doesn't have any of that. It's very simple and very fun, and yeah, I like it.
I just got Officer Barb Brady. It's pretty exciting.
So you're actually playing it?
Yeah.
Okay, cool.
I told you, like, twice via text.
No, I know, but you've told me you have played it. I didn't realize it was something
new. I told you it was fun, and then you didn't follow up. And
oh, I did. I might have probably just missed it. Sorry. I'm a bad friend. You're the worst. What is wrong with you? What else have you been up to?
What have I been up to? I've been up to so much, Ian. I've consumed a lot of popular culture and media in the past month, and I'm blanking on all of it.
Can we talk really briefly about Sorry for Bothering You?
Sorry to bother you.
Thank you. Sorry.
I apologize for interrupting you this fine evening. Do you want to talk about it?
Yes. So, Sorry to Bother You is a new movie by Boots Riley, starring Lakeith Stanfield and Tessa Thompson, and I loved it.
It's really good.
Yeah. How would you describe the movie? Because I'm finding it hard to describe to people. What would you say is like the, because it's a hyper reality, right? It's not set in reality, or it's not set in our idea of reality.
No, it is definitely a heightened reality.
Michel Gondry was a really good way to talk about it.
Yeah.
You mentioned him, but I don't think everybody knows Michel Gondry that well, necessarily, or his stuff, but it's really cool, man. It's a good movie. I don't know. Michel Gondry, for those who don't know, directed Signs of Sleep, Be Kind, Rewind,
Eternal Sunshine
was his big one. I don't know. I don't even really know what to say. I just watched it like 3 days ago and it really blew me away and I keep going back to it in my head.
I saw it with my buddy Jung, mm-hmm. and we usually, you know, grab lunch afterwards and talk for a very long time about whatever movie we just saw, and we didn't talk a ton about it. I think because there's just a lot. It took me like a day to be like, what the hell was that that I watched? In a good way. Yeah. There was a lot there to process.
I will say something I was bummed about, and this is not a... I wasn't bummed about the movie, so I want to be clear about what I say here. The third act gets very strange. I was very on board for the third act.
Mm-hmm.
But for the first two acts, I was thinking to myself, oh, I might recommend this to my parents. I might recommend this to, like, other people. And when the third act started, that thought went away. So it is... That bummed me out, because I think the movie is less commercially appealing for that reason. But... I think it's a really strong choice, and I think
it's really great, a
badass moment in the movie.
As soon as Armie Hammer comes into it,
Armie Hammer's incredible.
He's really good in it.
Armie Hammer gets to just play like a coked up version of Elon Musk in like the best possible way. It's fantastic.
Oh my god! And the way the public reacts to him is so good.
Yes, everything about the movie is perfect, and Tessie Thompson's amazing, and it's just great.
If nothing else, it's really exciting because you're like, what is Boots Riley going to do next?
Right,
like, where did he come from? As far as his filmmaking,
It kind of, the closest I could get to explaining the tone is that, you know how in Atlanta they have like weird hyper real stuff sometimes, like the invisible car and things like that? Why are you smiling at me like this?
I've never seen Atlanta.
Oh, okay. There's moments of things like that. So like, for instance, in Atlanta, there's an episode with Justin Bieber, and it's a young black kid instead of a young white kid, and they never comment on it the entire episode. And I looked it up afterwards because I was like, are they calling him Justin Bieber? And literally the point was just he wanted to see how people would react to Justin Bieber's behavior if he was a black kid instead of a white kid, and he thought it would be funny.
That's really interesting.
But they don't mention it in the episode, just Justin Bieber is a black guy in it. So if Atlanta was all that, like, hyper-real, weird choice tone that you just have to kind of go with a little bit, I feel like that's kind of what Sorry to Bother You is.
Anyway. I think if you watch the trailer, the trailer does not give away anything.
No, I don't think so either.
It sets kind of a good...
I think it's indicative of the tone pretty well, yeah.
But also it gets a lot weirder than what the trailer even shows you.
That's definitely true.
I love everyone in that movie, too.
No, for sure. What's the guy's name from Lost who's in it? I really like him, and I never remember his name. Isn't that...
From Lost?
Isn't he the... Oh, man, am I being racist? Isn't he the ghost hunter in Lost?
No, that's,
Shit, am I racist?
No, it's Glenn from Walking Dead, right?
That's who it is. It's okay, Steve Yeun, right? I'm just totally racist. I got... can we cut that out? God damn it. That's horrible. I thought it was the Ghostbuster from,
the guy from Rush Hour.
Is he from... I don't know.
You never saw Rush Hour?
I saw Rush Hour. I don't know who you're talking about.
He's the guy with the Asian guy with the bleached hair in Rush Hour.
I don't know.
He says the title in the first movie.
I don't remember. I believe you.
I mean, it's like one of the
greatest... We're going to cut all of this out because I don't want to be seen as racist and not being able to tell Asian people apart, so...
Do you understand the words that are coming out of my mouth? You like how I did that without being racist, Ian?
So just so everybody knows, I'm editing this episode, so I'm going to sound really good in it.
I really liked Chris Tucker and Whitney Houston. Who that was, right? In the main roles, Chris Tucker and Whitney Houston.
You're such a dickhead. All right, since I'm editing, we're moving on. Let's get to our first segment of the week.
Oh my god, what did we do last week?
I don't know.
No, I mean like what was our episode last
week? Well, it wasn't last week. I'm sorry?
Yeah.
Last week?
Yeah, the episode that came out last week as of our recording.
Right, when did we record that, though? I forget.
Oh, my God.
Was it last time I was in town?
Put your dick away.
Who's going first?
That's why I'm asking you what we did last week.
I don't know! Bobby, you're supposed to know this stuff. Okay, I'm going first. Let's talk about...
No, we have a system. We can't just throw away our system, Ian. Hang on! Shut up! Do not talk until I let you talk. Anyway, Ian,
I broke
the weather's pretty nice today, huh?
We have air conditioning. I'm in my parents' house right now, and there's air conditioning.
Cobra Kai and Glow, you get to go first this week.
My thing is better than your thing. So, for this week, I picked the movie Blockers. I picked it for a few reasons. One, I think it's very funny. Two, I think it's a very interesting script. And three, I think it was marketed very badly. I don't think anybody made any like really stupid decisions, but I think they chose to ignore a lot of the strengths of the movie in the marketing of the film. And so I wanted to talk about it today. Bobby, what did you think of Blockers?
It was all right.
Bobby, put your phone down. What are you doing?
No, I'm actually looking up things about... I forgot who had directed Blockers.
I don't know that off the top of my head. It's starring Leslie Mann, Ike Barinholtz, and John Cena. John Cena's great, right?
Yeah, John Cena's great. This has been previously established, I feel, but John Cena's really great.
Is he? Or has it been? What else is John Cena good in?
All I can think of is Sisters.
Oh, I forgot he was in Sisters, and he's really good at that. You're right.
But from that, I'm like,
no,
John Cena's amazing.
Yeah, you're right. Based on that, which is not a perfect movie, but it's funny.
Sisters isn't great.
Yeah, but John Cena's very good at it. And funny. You could tell that he's got like the kind of rock comedy chops that Dwayne Johnson has too, where he's like he knows how to be funny as a big handsome guy or whatever.
Let's circle back around to his character because it's fun.
Yeah,
I love
yeah.
this movie. Yeah, I was okay. kidding. I was totally messing with you.
It's great.
It's
right?
really really good.
So what? Yeah, let's talk about whatever you want to talk about. Let's start at the beginning.
It's directed by Kay Cannon, who wrote the Pitch Perfect films.
That's right. I knew it had some connection.
And was also a writer and producer on 30 Rock and New Girl and Girl Boss. So
okay,
that's who she is.
Okay,
written by two dudes, but yeah, I really liked it. What I thought was really interesting is I can't think of... I mean, it's just
good.
Well,
first off, let's talk about the plot. Because I think the log line is three parents find out that they're three teenage girls' children.
It's basically three parents trying to intervene in American Pie, right?
Right. It's basically... Yeah, I mean, the title is short for Cock Blockers.
Yes.
And they are trying to stop their daughters from...
The title's often stylized with a rooster.
Right,
Blockers.
The girls have decided to lose their virginity on prom night senior year. The parents find out and decide they want to stop it. Now, there's a bunch of inherently fucked up stuff in that decision, right? So you would assume that would be, like, a problematic movie. This is the biggest sleeper... like identity politics movie I've ever seen. Mm-hmm. I think the motivations the parents have are incredible. Leslie Mann has a very close relationship with her daughter that maybe borderlines on unhealthy. Her daughter loves her too, but she's ready to move away. And Leslie Mann finds out before prom that her boyfriend is moving to UCLA, and so she wants to stop it because she's worried that if she loses her virginity to this boy, she'll leave her. So mm-hmm. It's not about sexual shame or anything like that. There's none of that. Ike Barinholtz's daughter is gay. Ike Barinholtz is, absentee dad, but he knows that his daughter is gay. And he is there really for the first half of the movie to kind of stop the other two saying how fucked up they are. And then he realizes his daughter, because she's trying to kind of lie to herself, is going to try to have sex with a boy too. And so he decides that he wants to stop her because he doesn't want her to do something that's, you know, going to be emotionally harmful for herself. And then John Cena is our stereotypical alpha male who doesn't want his daughter deflowered, basically. But it's done in a very comedic way where I think he is the punchline of that more than anything else.
John Cena's character is sort of interesting because he is like the alpha male, but he's also, it's implied, right, that he's like the homemaker in his household?
Yes. First off, his wife is a doctor. They don't actually ever talk about it directly.
No.
His wife is a doctor. He seems to be some kind of homemaker / ex-athlete.
And it's never the butt of the joke that he's the homemaker?
No, the butt of the joke, in fact, really about him is how emotional he is. He cries all the time, but he cries in a, like, sports crying. Like, when he talks to his daughter and gives her pep talks, he uses, like, very cliche sports language and things
Which,
like that.
Even as we're saying that, that doesn't sound great, but that's never emasculating? Like,
No, she, because his daughter is a jock.
Yeah.
She is, so his daughter, let's talk about her, 'cause she's my favorite character in the movie, I think. Well, I don't know. I'm gushing. So why don't you just talk about some things.
The thing I really like about this movie, it's the, you know, I'm trying to think of another comedy in recent memory, and Game Night is the closest I can think of, where it's all very funny, but all of those characters, like every single one of the characters, has very clear motivations and is really well developed.
Including the teenage girls, by the way, which you would not expect in this movie. You would expect, first off, that those teenage girls are cookie cutter, shitty characters that the parents are like having to deal with, right? And really, this is two movies. There's a movie about the parents and there's a movie about the teenagers, and both of them are given equal time, and both of them, I don't think there's a weak character in this film.
No, not at all.
Like, I think you could very easily explain every character in three sentences very clearly,
and they're all be unique. They're all established very well at the beginning. There isn't, if you stopped halfway through, you'd be like, oh, all these characters are great except for the Ike Barinholtz character, you know, and then someone has to say, wait for it. He has his moment at the end.
Right.
From the beginning, you're like, oh, all these are very, very interesting kind of
set, and they're all setups. They're all likable. Mm-hmm. They're all likable even though they're all doing kind of dumb things. Like, Ike Barinholtz is a loser, and we know it, but we love him anyway. John Cena is a dumbass, but we love him anyway.
And the actions they all take are, with the parents especially, are all surprising but understandable.
Yes.
Like, from the beginning, after they set up all those characters, you know, they set up the Leslie Mann character as kind of like a progressive, forward-thinking single mom.
Yeah.
And then immediately she spies on her daughter and then tries to stop her from losing her virginity on prom night, which is, they do the homework to get you to understand that action, but it's not what you'd expect.
Right.
Like, Barinholtz, who's the doofus, like, absentee dad, right away is like, hey, this is a terrible idea, and we're going to scar our kids for life if we do this.
I thought
that was really interesting.
Yeah, and I think the thing that most impresses me about all of that is that it never feels like homework. It's all done within the sense of comedy that, like, you're laughing the whole time. There's a scene halfway through the movie where John Cena's wife, who is a woman of color, like, yells at all three of them for being fucked up. But she's especially yelling at Leslie Mann because she's another woman. And Leslie Mann is pretending, like, this woman is being like a hippie loser because she doesn't want to admit why she is trying to stop this in the moment, but she very clearly agrees with John Cena's wife. It's just a really funny scene.
She defends herself by saying, we went to all the marches, even the tax day march. No one went to that one.
Yeah, it's great.
Yeah.
It's a great moment. The other thing that I'm very impressed by in this movie, and I didn't think about it at first, is the teenagers are never the butt of the joke.
No.
So, for instance, there's the three different teenage girls. Leslie Mann's daughter is kind of the archetypal, pretty prom queen, like, nice girl who's been with a boyfriend the whole time and wants to lose her virginity, like, on a bed of roses, right? Like, the very, like, very stereotypical, cliche teenage idea of romance and virginity. That's never a joke about her. And in fact, she gets that thing, and I was waiting for the turn where her boyfriend was, like, shitty, or she said she didn't want it anymore, and then he was, like, mean about it. None of that ever happens, and I wondered why, and then I realized, because this movie is actually about parents learning to trust their children. And to do that, the children have to make the right decisions. And
I just wanted to readjust my chair.
Oh, you're okay. That really blew me away. I really, really enjoyed that. John Cena's daughter basically wants to have a one-night stand. Her love interest is maybe the funniest character to me in the movie. I really liked. He's a one-note character, but in the best possible way.
But it's like a one-note character with a little bit. Like, it's fun.
He's great. He's super funny in it.
He has, like, the moniker of the cook, because he cooks drugs into everything.
Well, so when we first meet him, we very slowly learn over the course of the movie. There's this running gag where she says, and it's great. It's great from the beginning. She says, do you want to get a drink? And he goes, yeah, I'll get you some punch. And she goes, oh, like a drink. And he goes, oh, yeah, let me call my guy. And he pulls out a flask and holds it to his ear and says hello. And then when she drinks it, he explains that it's this stuff that he made himself and fermented it. Later, he gives her pot, and it's this thing that he's grown himself. Later, he gives her DMT that's baked into almond cookies.
Yeah.
And then it very, like, more and more. But he's talking about them in these, like, very hipster artisanal terms that are, like, more cooking show than a drug dealer.
Right.
And then the parents find out that he's called the cook, and he makes, like, extremely fancy drug treats for everyone he knows. And he's just the chillest guy in the world. When the movie ends, the big finale with all three of the parents and kids, John Cena is the only one who catches his daughter. He runs in and grabs this kid and throws him across the room. And the next shot is of him on the ground, and he's got a big grin on his face. He goes, I think I'm fine, actually. And he's just like the level of like peace in him is so funny to me. Especially because he's the only one who's like being threatened. Like yeah. he's the only one who is the target of ire by one of the parents. The other two are just trying
to
stop
their kids.
It's the
only way you can make that scene work.
Yeah,
too.
Yeah.
Because otherwise it's a little problematic that this adult is attacking a child.
But, of course, yeah.
But the idea that he's just kind of like, nah, man, it's totally cool. I'm not even hurt. After literally being thrown into a sink so that it breaks. But I love the idea that the stoner character is just like way more impressed with the stuff he's cooking. Like he's kind of like just this pretentious foodie who's just yes. so impressed with himself.
Yes.
And like the drugs are just kind of like incidental to the things that he's cooking.
Well, and I think maybe one of my favorite lines in the movie, and it's the reason why her character is amazing and I think he's really funny, is she decides, hey, we're not gonna have sex tonight. Like I think I agree with my friend a little bit that it should be a little special. I don't think I need the roses, but like, let's hang out for a couple of weeks. And he says, it's a great line, and he goes, yeah, we could just like hang out and maybe like do some light journaling. And,
yeah.
and then she goes, or we could do other stuff, and basically just points at her vagina and has him go down on her. And it's like, it's just an amazing moment.
Well, there's a moment at the beginning.
Because she has a... I don't like masculine and feminine in these terms because I think they're like gender essentialist, but if you want to use that language, she has a masculine energy. She's like got confidence and
she's
got
that jock. She's the most forward of all of them.
Yeah, she's very forward, aggressive in saying what she wants, and it was just a really funny moment.
And I love when they get to prom, she kind of just pulls him aside and she's like, hey, we're going to have sex tonight.
Yeah.
And he's just like, okay.
No, what he keeps saying is, yeah, wherever the road takes
yeah.
us. And she's like, it's going to take us to my vagina. Like, just
yeah.
so you know. And he eventually has to just be like, okay, I'm going to stop saying whatever happens and be like, okay, that's what you want.
And I was wondering what the twist was going to be.
Right.
Like, he was going to be super Christian.
Yeah,
he was
yeah.
going to be gay or something.
That's and what no, you keep waiting for these boys to, like, have a turn. And that's not the movie we're watching.
No.
And because that's such an easy thing to do, right? And it also undercuts these girls. It undercuts them as people. It undercuts their ability to be seen as people who can trust and have insight and things like that. And so I also really enjoyed, because it's like they have to walk a very fine line with Ike Barinholtz's daughter, because you're going to feel bad for the guy that she's with. And so they kind of just lean into that and make him this very overweight, very short, very ridiculous redhead in a fedora who's like really, really confident in himself for no reason.
He's like a theater kid.
Yeah,
too,
yeah,
yeah,
yeah. And I thought that was really smart too. That they make this guy who's just kind of lovable and doesn't realize that he is like.
And Ike Barinholtz is
yeah.
so in love with this kid too. Like he yeah. keeps talking about how he's the coolest. He must be the coolest kid in class, and we'll make throwaway comments, even though this guy clearly like.
He keeps talking very seriously about how great his fedora is.
Even though he doesn't want his daughter to sleep with him yeah. for reasons that are, you know.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Yeah.
Sweet? I don't know.
I think they're very sweet. I also was really impressed at the end with the decision that they made, because this is something that I think most people who try to be allies struggle with, and I thought it was an interesting moment. His daughter comes out to him, and he never in the process of this says, I know that's why I'm here. He never says, like, yeah, look, because his daughter doesn't like him.
Mm-hmm.
Right when the movie starts, like he basically cheated on his wife after she was horrible to him for a long time, but the rest of the people in his life don't know that story, so he's just seen as kind of like the loser who is an absentee dad. He has an opportunity in that moment to be like, yes, I know you better than you know yourself, I'm your father, and he doesn't take it. He just says like, thank you for sharing with me, I love you, and hugs her. And that's cool. I like that a lot.
He does, but he also... Cause,
does he?
No, because he... Well, no, he never does that,
yeah,
but because
yeah.
that moment is really great.
Yeah.
Like, I weirdly got very caught up in that moment.
Uh-huh.
I was just like, this is great, because Ike Barinholtz has a moment where he reacts to it. And
yeah.
I'm like, this is really, really sweet. And
yeah.
then he goes, you told me this before you told your mom?
and he just starts crying.
And before you told, I forget the step, the Hannibal Buress character.
Frank.
Before you told Frank.
Which Frank, is, the running joke of Frank is he's obviously the nicest guy in the universe.
Yeah.
And Ike Barinholtz is just a total unnecessary asshole to him all the time.
Ike Barinholtz makes his entrance in this movie in a limo that no one asked for. He's standing out the hood. He's making a big scene.
With sparklers and screaming.
All of the attention
him. I believe Firework is playing over the
yes.
speakers really loudly or something.
And yeah. everyone is clearly very upset to see him. His ex-wife played by June Diane Raphael is really upset to see him. And then Frank, played by Hannibal Buress, just kind of lights up and smiles. Yeah, like, goes, oh, hey! Just really happy to see you.
Ike Barinholtz is great in this movie. The opening scene is the three girls meeting when they're teenagers, or when they're children, I'm sorry. Yeah. And all three, the parents are standing there, and Ike Barinholtz goes, I think our kids are friends. I think that makes us friends. And then the other two start talking, and in the background, Ike Barinholtz just keeps going, you guys want to go get a drink? Do you guys, what about a drink? Does that sound good? You guys want to go get a drink really quick? And then the scene ends. And it just lets you know everything you need to know about these three people. It's great.
I love the recurring kind of thing where John Cena clearly wants to be Leslie Mann's friend and keeps like asking yes. him to go to yoga and stuff. Yeah. And it's not, like, the yoga isn't actually really a joke, even though it's kind of a little bit funny.
Right.
You know, but it's just that's...
Well, that's true of all three of them, because John Cena wants to still be friends with her. She's not super interested anymore. And Ike Barinholtz wants to be friends with both of them, and they clearly shunned him after the divorce a little bit.
Right.
And so it's about these three people becoming friends again, too. There's a lot of things happening in this movie.
Specifically, the John Cena Leslie Mann friendship is not a thing I've really seen in other movies.
Totally,
before.
Yeah, you're right.
Like there's clearly nothing weird going.
No,
on.
No, there's
there.
Nothing romantic like, at all. Yeah. They just were a group of friends, and they've kind of drifted apart, and they're sad about it, or he's sad about it. There's the movie, like, it does things that are like stereotypical comedy things. Like, there's the big set pieces. Like, for instance, there is the butt-chugging set piece, which sounds like it would be like cliche, but these people are also funny. It just totally works. Like, the movie is funny the whole time. It never feels like it's preaching to you. It is trying to show how to make high concept comedies that are not misogynistic or sexist, or I guess it was the same thing, but you know what I mean. Like, that are able to healthily navigate through identity politics. Mm-hmm. And it just really impressed me.
And I always try to catch myself, especially in this thing that we put out mm-hmm. into the world that, you know, fewer than a dozen people listen to. But, you know, I try to watch myself and make sure I'm not, like, congratulating myself for being the best ally.
Right. And I don't think that is an integral part of understanding this movie.
No, it absolutely is. I was trying to preface saying, like, I can't think of another, because this is at its core a teen sex comedy.
Yes.
And I can't think of one that stars three teenage girls and doesn't, like, even remotely shame them for wanting to have sex or make, like, make
or
a big
just
joke
doesn't
out
make
of...
them a silly people. Like in Mean Girls, all of the plastics except for Lindsay Lohan are a joke. They are they are inherently shitty, like, dumb people, and that's usually how we portray teenagers, especially teenage girls in pop culture. And this movie doesn't do that, and you don't miss it. You don't notice it doesn't do that. I was halfway through the movie before I leaned over to my friend and said, the motivations in this movie are really interesting. It sneaks up on you.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So, anyway.
I'm on another podcast called In Defense of Bad Movies.
Talk about your other podcast.
And, a quick background on that. No, I'm joking. I always face a decision when I'm watching movies where, you know, especially with newer movies, to rent them is half the cost of buying them.
Right.
Sometimes it's really hard to justify, and I know that's why the rental costs are so high, because I'm like, do I want to spend, you know, $7 to rent this?
Especially if it's something you've never seen before.
Spend
$15
to just buy it.
Right.
And so I bought this one, and I felt okay buying it. It's not like when I bought The Postman, and I'm really upset with myself for having bought The Postman.
Well,
in my library.
I will say right now that I have no idea why you would conceivably ever buy The Postman. Did you really ever think you would watch that movie more than once?
Yeah, but again, it's just like, do I want to spend $6 to rent it or $12 to buy it?
You know, when I was in high school, I was hanging out with a friend of mine, and we went to Target, and they were selling, at the time I was like, I thought it was like an interesting personality trait that I really liked buying DVDs, and I bought a copy of of Schindler's List for like $6, and I was really excited about getting it for so cheap. And my friend was with me, and he got really quiet, and then like 5 minutes later, he really kind of angrily went, why did you buy that? Like, when are you going to be sitting around and like, ooh, you know what I could go for is some Schindler's List. When are you going to have, like, a party and have everybody over to watch Schindler's List? And I've probably never
watched... That's the start of your annual Schindler's List.
Yeah. But I did. It made me think
everyone
about...
Everyone wears black and white except for one person who wears red.
I'm really glad that's where you decided to go with the theme party for Schindler's List. There was a lot of other directions you could have gone.
Yeah. Like what, Ian? Say them out loud.
Are we done talking about blockers?
No, because I want to talk about another movie that... So I one time had the decision whether or not I wanted to just... Whether I wanted to rent Batman and Robin, to buy Batman and Robin, or just for like $10 more to buy all four of the 90s Batman movies in a package.
The first two were fun.
And I did that. I bought the package, and I didn't realize that two of them are really bad. Like, two of them suck.
I'm a Batman Forever apologist. It's not good, but it's a specific thing that you have to, like...
It confidently... Well, no, that's not true. Black Panther came out this year. I was gonna say... Okay, up until Black Panther, it had the best movie soundtrack tie-in to a superhero movie.
With the Kiss of a Rose?
Yeah.
I just forget about that. Yeah, I like Jim Carrey in that. I also got really excited when Janelle Monáe wore what was very clearly the Tommy Lee Jones Two-Face suit to a red carpet event like a month ago. That was fun for me.
Janelle Monáe in general is pretty cool.
The current rumors that her and Tessa Thompson are dating, and those are two of my favorite people in the world, so I kind of hope it's true. That's all. I have nothing more to say about that. But
yeah. I see the tension.
The tension?
Between the two
of them. Oh, yeah.
Okay,
we're moving on. What what did you pick for this week, Bobby?
Experience life. Experience wonder. Experience laughter. Experience sound. Experience love. Experience life. Experience lust. Experience pain. Experience Bobby.
I picked the Janelle Monáe music video. I'm joking. I picked The Problem with Apu, which is a documentary made for True TV, I think, by Hari Kondabolu.
Yes.
And it's about the character Apu from The Simpsons. Apu
Nasapimapetalon. Yeah.
And it's kind of about the relationship that every, like, East Asian kid...
In America.
In America had, you know, like, growing up in the 90s.
Yeah.
Had with that character and how it kind of defined a whole subset of the population.
Yeah.
Yeah,
I mean, do you want me to...
Yeah, go for it.
I really, really, really like this. It's about 50 minutes long. It's pretty short. It's a good documentary. I got it on iTunes for about $4 or $5. Were you a Simpsons fan growing up?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, me too.
I'm still a huge Simpsons fan.
I am too.
I love The Simpsons.
They have Matt Groening has a new Netflix show coming out next month. And
it looks good too.
About him, I was a huge Futurama fan. And this has been like a growing conversation for the last 8 years. I think one of the things the documentary made interesting is how much it clearly people knew it should have been a conversation even when it was first starting. But especially like in the last 10 or 15 years. But I mean, yeah, at its core, this is a story about the fact that East Asian people have not had a lot of representation in pop culture in the United States, especially not real representation, meaning they've been played by white people in brown face a lot. Hank Azaria is a white guy who does the voice of this character. He's been doing a fairly stereotypical version of that character for 25 years. It's The Simpsons, so like South Park, we kind of don't look too much into that stuff, but what the documentary is pointing out is that because this is really the only representation in pop culture of Indian American people for a really long time, it became the defining version of Indian American people for a really long time. And I thought that was interesting. I thought it was really interesting that to see some of these, you know, pretty big names talking about how they don't necessarily blame the show, but they do recognize that it is something that affected them. I think it was one of the things that was interesting about the documentary for me is how careful everyone is talking about it. Even Hari is really taking steps to say, like, I'm not trying to alienate you if you're a Simpsons fan, because The Simpsons is just such a big thing that I think people are scared to criticize it. Scared's the wrong word. They're hesitant to criticize it. I think people have a hard time admitting fault with something like this. And that's always a journey, you know, realizing that there's something problematic and something you like and figuring out how to still like it anyways. Like, I think that's the modern dilemma with consumers, is figuring out what gets to count and what doesn't. You know, I just rewatched Three Amigos recently, and like there's stuff you got to deal with in that movie, right? Mm-hmm. Like, so I don't know, it's interesting.
Short Circuit was one of my favorite movies growing up.
I've actually never seen Short Circuit. I know that's the most famous one when we're talking about Indian American.
You know, it's funny, I literally didn't know Fisher Stevens was white.
I think that's true of a lot of people, yeah. Right?
This is really embarrassing. This is probably the singular most offensive thing I've ever done in my life.
Uh-huh.
I was a big fan of the show All That growing up. It's like a...
I know All That.
Yeah, it's like a kids' variety show on Nickelodeon in the 90s. All That had this series of like music festivals growing up. And so I went to one of their music festivals, and they had a booth where you could audition to be a cast member on All That.
Yes!
And so I was like 10, 11, 12, and I went and... audition to be on All That.
Oh, I'm so happy right now. Did you prepare anything?
I did, on the car ride. And I this is horrifying, because I didn't even think about this until I was watching the movie, and I'm like, this was a thing I did. I went in, and they're like, do you have any impressions you can do? And I did Apu.
Oh, no, did you really?
And then I walked out, and my mom looked at me and was just like, I cannot believe you did that. And I'm like, it was funny. And then I just kind of like went on with my day.
Well, so here's the thing. I think the thing with that is, like, your mom recognized that there's something in representation there. Mm-hmm. You're a 10-year-old who likes The Simpsons. Or a 16-year-old who likes The Simpsons or whatever, and you're watching a show that you are being told by the show and everybody who watches the show is very smart, is very clever, is very interesting, and is really funny. And what Hari Kondabolu is kind of saying with this documentary is that most of the things that make Apu funny are not the voice. Interesting. They're just the accent. And for instance, I thought it was really interesting that he pointed out that "Thank You, Come Again" has only been said 6 times in the entire series.
My mind.
And that is still like, so the movie starts off with him doing stand up and somebody screaming "Thank You, Come Again" out from the audience. And he said, yeah, those 4 words have followed me my entire life. And I like The Simpsons. I like the show, but this character has haunted me, you know? Yeah, I don't know. I really, really appreciate it. Let's talk about some of the names that are in it, because there's a lot of big people in it.
He got, like...
Aziz is in it. Yeah. Aparna Nancharla is in it. Yes. How do you say his last name? Isn't he in it?
Who?
Riz Ahmed, isn't he in it? No.
Hassan Minhaj is in it.
I get those two confused sometimes.
And then
they both got big in politics at the exact same time.
The most heartbreaking one, I thought, was they... Utkarsh Ambudkar. I'm sorry if I got his name
wrong. No, that's okay. Yeah.
You know who I'm talking about.
He's the one who did the pilot show? Is he the one who did... No, he did the Simpsons character. He did Apu's nephew, right?
Yes. Yeah. Okay. He was in the Pitch Perfect movies.
That's right, yeah. He's really funny in those movies, for the record. I really like him in those.
And his story about the experience of voicing Apu's nephew was really heartbreaking.
Right.
So the idea was... You know, they cast him to be Apu's nephew, and he said, do I have to do a stupid voice? And they're like, no. The whole point...
is he's an Americanized... Yeah.
Yeah, we want to represent you accurately, and you're going to be frustrated with Apu for being these unrealistic stereotypes.
And if you've seen Mindy Project, he's basically playing the exact same role he plays on Mindy Project.
Yes.
Isn't that... Yeah, right? That's him. He plays Mindy's brother. Yeah, okay. Which is just like a rap-obsessed, very Americanized young man... who is Indian.
Yes.
Yeah.
He was also I believe he was the first person in the very first Hamilton workshop to play Aaron Burr. So I'm bringing it all the way back to Hamilton again.
Well, finish what you were saying, though, because I agree that this is a kind of heartbreaking moment in the doc.
Yeah, he records a version of the ending where he goes off on Apu for... Mm-hmm. You know, being these stereotypes, and then at one point he says, you know, you sound like a white guy doing an impression of an Indian guy.
And that was an alt that he wanted to include. Yeah.
And then they would cut to Hank Azaria in the voice booth.
And he'd look at the camera. And he'd
look at the camera, yeah. Which is a brilliant way to address it.
Right.
And to fix it. And then from there, you could move forward with Apu, you know.
I also thought... Oh, go finish. I'm sorry. I'll tell you.
And then so... But what ends up happening is, you know, his character gives that monologue. And then... what's his name?
The Italian chef. I don't remember his name.
He comes out and says something like, stereotypes? Who's talking about stereotypes?
Yeah, yeah.
And it's like a stupid joke, and it actively diminishes that whole
thing. Well, it is The Simpsons saying, that's just what we do. Don't worry about it so much.
We offend everyone.
Right. I don't know. It was interesting. The other thing I was going to say was, there was a scene where people were talking about, they were pitching like ways to fix it, quote unquote. And I thought a really funny one that actually would make sense for The Simpsons is if they just revealed that he'd been like an undercover cop for 20 years or something. Like he basically, the accent was fake, that he'd just been like doing this, and then just keep having Apu in and make him a real person. I don't know. It's complicated. I think what the documentary does very well is cut through a lot of the counter arguments people would make to this, which are, no, Apu's smart. No, Apu's like a first generation immigrant. You're supposed to be proud of him. And the show says, like, okay, but the reason you laugh at Apu is not because of how funny he is and how smart he is. It's because he talks funny.
Right.
I will say I'm a big fan of Dana Gould. I like his comedy. And it was a little hard for me to watch the scene where he is talking to Hari about it, because he is very clearly, like, drawn a line in the sand for himself, where he says, like, I'm not going to apologize past this point. And it gets to the point where he leans on that line so heavily that he just is looking at the camera and says, I will only speak for myself, but in my experience, white Americans find certain accents funny, period. And then the scene ends. And I was just like, I mean, you're probably right, but is that something we want to, like, mine for material? Like, I don't know. It's just... I think it's an interesting documentary because he does get some people to talk about it very honestly. I also was shocked by how many people on the street he interviewed who had no idea that it was a white guy doing the voice.
Yeah, that was just interesting.
I mean, I grew up with a lot of Simpsons trivia in my life. All my friends were fans too, so maybe that's why.
Yeah, like, I feel like we both knew who everyone was voiced by because we were really, really into the show.
Yeah, but yeah, it was fascinating. I really, really enjoyed it.
I thought... Cal Penn was an interesting interview too.
Absolutely.
He's just like, no, I can't deal with this show. You know, I think most of the comedic people he interviews are also hesitant to criticize The Simpsons because...
Well, he's not. He the first thing he says is he hated The Simpsons.
No, that's what I'm saying. He's in contrast to everyone else, because I think everyone else kind of, you know, was...
Well, there's some, the rest of them, I think, are dealing with something where they're like, yeah, I'm a fan of this, and it hurts me.
Yeah.
And that's hard to deal with. I think one of the moments that jumped out really, really heavily to me actually was a very small thing where Hari asks Cal Penn, basically, like, have you ever done a role that you regret or that you feel like involved stereotyping in some way? And he says no. And then he goes, wait, let me think about it for a second. I'm used to doing interviews where I just give answers like that right away, because I know that's the answer I'm supposed to give. And it made me realize how much these issues are just a part of the daily life experiences of Indian American actors and entertainers. It just is. Like the reason that they're talking about this is they are still, I mean, I think we like to think of Hollywood as like, well, nobody's asking people to do accents anymore, or nobody's like saying like, hey, can you up the accent? I'm sure they've changed the language so that it's, you know, doesn't sound as harsh when you say it, but that's absolutely going to be a part of that.
It's crazy because I always think of, you know, Cal Penn has made himself very...
I forgot about Raj. Or yeah, Taj. Taj. I mean, Taj.
His name is Taj Mahal.
Taj Mahal. I forgot that's about that movie. I forgot about Taj Mahal. He made a sequel that was just about him as the Rise Taj. Of Taj.
He was the guy from Van Wilder for a while, you know, before he was Kumar, before...
And then he also has this great line where somebody, where he says an Indian kid walked up to him once drunk and said, you know, everybody calls me Kumar because of you, so thanks a lot. And Cal Penn says, well, isn't that better than Apu? I thought that was that was great. Really funny. I also thought they did a really good job at the beginning because Matt Groening is an intellectual and he likes to present himself as an intellectual. And so in response to criticisms about Apu, he said, well, I named him after this very famous trilogy of Indian films that are great.
Yeah, trilogy.
And that's really interesting. But then Hari transposes those against Apu and it's this real human story about a man versus a dancing cartoon character.
Yeah.
I also, we didn't talk about the Negrobilia of Whoopi. Whoopi Goldberg. Whoopi Goldberg collects racist memorabilia from throughout history, and Hari ends the episode by giving her a action figure of Apu that sings and dances. And I thought that was rhetorically a very smart move as well. So I like that a lot. It was a great documentary. I can't say enough about it.
I picked it specifically. I kind of like rage picked it because Matt Groening.
Right, because you're like you're such a good person.
Bobby. I am. I'm a really good person. No, it was, but yeah, I am an incredibly, insanely good person.
Yeah, yeah.
Well documented. Did you hear our conversation about blockers?
Such feminist. I know, ballet. This is the fucking like SGWist episode we've ever done.
Guys, I am half not white, so it's okay. No, I Matt Groening, the conversation in the wake of Hari Kondabolu has become sort of like a lightning rod post this documentary.
Yeah.
Because, again, he dared, you know,
criticize the Simpsons. You can tell in the documentary he knew that was coming because he says everything he needs to say in response to that before it even starts.
And before the documentary, he had done a rant on W. Kamau Bell's show, which apparently had caught the attention of, you know, Hank Azaria and, you know, some of the Simpsons creators.
Right.
But the arguments against Hari Kondabolu in his documentary are so infuriating because they are clearly
made... What are they?
They are clearly made out of ignorance of the documentary. I mean, not just out of ignorance. Just
people who haven't actually seen it.
Yeah. Matt Groening had first said, people find a way to be outraged about everything. That was his first comment, which is infuriating because...
That's literally something that they address in the documentary. I would say, I mean, he points out, like, when people say get over it, he says, I've been getting over it for 28 years. Yeah. Like, if this show doesn't end, I'm going to have to keep getting over it for the rest of my life. Like, this is a thing that's hard for me, and it should, it's hard for a lot of South Asian Americans, you know? Like, I don't know.
We said East Asian, like, a bunch of idiots.
Did we?
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
South Asian.
Okay.
What was it?
Matt. Did we both do that? That's really bad. I probably did it.
I did it, and then I'm like, did I say that?
And then I probably just, like, we'll make it out later. It's Bobby's fault.
Matt, a couple weeks ago of this recording, Matt Groening, you know, again, made a comment on the Apu thing, which Matt Groening just needs to shut up, right? Like, he doesn't need to keep making comments about this. Like, he's barely involved with The Simpsons anymore,
That's my understanding as well, and also, I would assume that Matt Groening is at a point in his life where it's maybe unfair for him to feel like he has the right to talk about normal human life experiences. Like, you've been Matt Groening for 25 years. You don't live in reality, dude. I don't know. It's
in his comment, which was the most insane out of all the comments, which have been like, you know, they're an equal opportunity offender. Right. People are just taking this, you know, SJW thing too far.
Right, right.
He was just like, well, yeah, you know, I feel like... ideologically, you know, Hari and I would align on most issues, you know, and we could have done better, but, you know, like, tell me another show that was representing South Asians at the time.
Right.
And that was, like, his defense of Apu. Like, no, because we were the only ones representing him. Like, it's literally... His entire point was that you were the only representation. And
it was a bad representation, and so we were hurt by it. The other thing that I thought was really interesting about the documentary, I will say that was kind of a minor running theme throughout, is I think Whoopi Goldberg brings this up when she's talking about the racist imagery. I think a couple other people bring it up as well, is how these people just didn't consider this.
Mm-hmm.
There was no, like... Because I think Hari's angry, right? So he goes in and he wants to find a narrative of, or at least it seems the way it's edited, that he wants to find a narrative of, like, fuck them, fuck Indian people. Like, they're stupid, they're annoying, they're funny, let's make fun of them. And what he finds instead is a lot of people saying, like, nobody thought about it.
Yeah.
And there's a moment where they're talking to this guy, and it's one of the only times they talk to him about a pilot that didn't go, about an Indian family. Mm-hmm. And the guy's saying, oh, we went around the room and everybody said why they're here and what their expertise is. And he said, and I stood up and said, I'm Indian, because I was literally the only Indian person in the room on a show about an Indian American family. And like, that was a moment of that. Whoopi Goldberg saying, like, I don't think that this restaurant that's called, like, you know, something horrible was named because they were thinking, like, let's get black people. They just thought it was like a funny name, and they didn't think about the consequences to the other people. And so this coming out of like ignorance more than it's coming out of evil,
of course.
I think cuts a lot of those arguments down, because I think the reason those people are upset is their friend is being called racist, right? Mm-hmm. The Simpsons is their friend. It's been their friend for 20 years, and it's being they're being told that it did something wrong. And it's really hard for people to get their heads around that. I think to reach the point of saying they did do something wrong, nobody who worked on The Simpsons is a bad person, but now this is something we have to deal with, is an interesting way to get there.
The documentary also brings up that The Simpsons is in an incredibly unique situation, in that had this been, you know, any other show,
it would have been canceled 20 years ago, so who cares?
Right, yeah. And The Simpsons is like the beast that will not die,
right?
Even though it probably maybe should have like a decade ago.
Right.
But, you know, it's like, well, now, you know, the status quo has been sort of maintained as far as all these characters for so many years. Like, what are you going to do?
And the thing is, like, that's silly. Like, shows change all the time. The reason that Archer is the show it is currently is because for the first four seasons, they worked for a company called ISIS. And then ISIS fucking started happening in the world. So they changed the show because that's crazy. Like, why would you? But that's, you know, it's, so it's very easy to do those things. It's not a problem, and it's not an attack on you as a person who enjoyed Apu or whatever. It's that's the thing. I think white people hear this stuff, or people who are not being hurt by it, and they think that it's an attack on them, when really it's somebody saying, hey, I'm hurting, so can I stop doing this thing now, you know?
Right. And I think that's a thing that certainly, and I've been guilty of this in the past.
Everybody
It's you need to learn not to take attacks on things you like, or even creators need to take, you know,
attack on you
on things they've created, especially if they created it a couple decades ago, as a personal attack. Right. It's we're all constantly learning. We're becoming more aware of things.
Yeah, yeah. It impressed me. I will say I was bummed that Hank Azaria didn't. So it ends with Hank Azaria basically sending an email saying, I don't want to be on the show. I don't feel comfortable talking about this issue on television right now. And then Hari looks at the camera and says, how lucky he is that he gets to decide his representation on television. What a nice thing for him. And then the documentary ends.
Mm-hmm.
I feel bad for Hank Azaria. I will say that.
I think Hank Azaria after this is literally the only person associated with The Simpsons.
So what did he do after? Because I don't know about
that. He went on, Hank Azaria went on Colbert.
Okay.
And, you know, Colbert asked him his opinion on the documentary and his thoughts. And this is his quote. He said, I think the most important thing we have to do is listen to South Asian people. Indian people in this country, when they talk about what they feel and how they think about this character and what their American experience of it has been, listening to the voices means inclusion in the writer's room. I really want to see Indian, South Asian writer or writers in the room, not in a token way, but genuinely informing whatever new direction this character may take, including how it is voiced or not voiced. I'm perfectly willing and happy to step aside or help it transition into something new.
That's great. That's also, like, here's the thing. He's in a hard position in terms of image.
Mm-hmm.
He's not in a hard position in terms of his finances or his job, because he also voices 90 other characters on that show.
Right.
So it's really just an issue of pride on the part of Simpsons creators and Simpsons people, or maybe pride's the wrong word, but of like acquiescence to this issue.
Mm-hmm.
It's an ideological position that he's stuck in, not a practical one.
Right.
And that's part of why I think it's infuriating, is because it's obviously so easy to fix with so few actual negative consequences to that. Like, I don't know. I don't know.
And he, especially,
that's well said, though.
Exactly, and I'm sure he sat down with, you know, I'm publicist
sure crafted,
who crafted that message for him. But it's like all these Simpsons creators who aren't even involved with the show anymore.
Right.
It's literally all they have to say, if they were to say anything.
Have a lot of other people...
Like, yeah, I've heard of a few people. I can't name them
off the top
of
my head. It's not just, like Conan or whatever. I'd be curious to see what he would say about it at this point. I mean, he was a Simpsons writer probably 25 years ago. So, that's interesting. Well, it was very, very thought-provoking, very interesting documentary. I promise you that maybe I don't promise you, but I will say I am very, very much a Simpsons fan, and it did not upset me. I thought it was very interesting, so... That's all I have to say about it. Yeah, it was great.
We're really interesting people.
I know.
Yeah,
I know.
We're really well-rounded. We should...
This should just be called the Pat Ourselves on the Back for Being Allies podcast. Yeah. I think that's what it's turning into. We're trying to come up with a new name anyway. Really quick, before we move on, I want to shout something out because it was recommended to me by a listener to the show and a friend of mine who... mentioned that it might be something interesting to talk about on the show, and I think we will once we talk about it a little bit more. I would recommend that anybody who wants to have an interesting experience and has about 30 or 40 minutes to kill, go online on a laptop, I think would probably be best, on a computer rather than a phone, and Google football 17776. There are three sevens. Football 17776. That's it. That's all I have to say.
Do not type 4-7s. Whatever you do, do not type 4-7s. Do not do it.
What happens?
3-7s. That's it.
It's a really interesting piece of art. I'm curious to look into it more. We really just started looking at it, both of us, like a day ago. So it's not something we're going to talk about today, but I wanted to bring it up for might be an intro segment in the future. So.
Yeah, no, I'm gonna talk about it next time.
It's you liked it too, right?
It's very strange. It's a thing, man.
Yeah, it's very strange. It's a little creepy. Is not the right word. Maybe it would be if this is something you do at 1 a.m. by yourself, I could see it creeping you out. But it's not intentionally scary or anything like that. It's just strange. Okay. That's it. That's all I have to say.
That's awesome.
Are we done talking about Apu?
We'll never be done talking about
that's Apu. Fair. Bobby, what are you...
So, this is what I think we should do.
Yeah, what should we do?
All right.
Are we going to be playing video
games?
Because
last time we did a whole segment where we talked about video games. And we ended up having to edit it out.
Yeah, we sure did.
And change it. So, I think we should, again, pretend as though we are definitely going to do video games next time. We'll set up our video games, but then we'll each talk about a backup pick.
Here's what I'm going to do. I'm not going to do that. We're going to keep both of them in, and I'm not going to edit on the video.
No, we shouldn't edit it. We should definitely...
I want everyone to know, so you can't lie to the public anymore, Bobby.
With your assistance and your blessing, Ian.
What would you like to talk about next time? What is your pick for next?
Are we going to do our backup pick or our video game pick first?
Video game pick first. Let's do that.
Okay. So my video game pick is a video game called Firewatch.
Uh-huh.
It's from a company called Campo Santo. It's in a genre called the walking simulator, which I hate that it's called that.
Yeah.
It's really great. You take a position as a Firewatch at a national park.
Uh-huh.
And your character is played by Rich Summer. Mm-hmm. There's only one other character in the game.
Okay.
It's great.
I've heard a lot about it. It's kind of in the art scene side of video games a little bit more, and I'm really interested to play it.
I really like how decidedly adult all the themes are.
Okay.
It's unlike any other video game I've played.
So it's kind of like Leisure Suit Larry, something like that? Okay, cool.
There's so much fucking.
Yeah, cool.
Yeah. You do see Dick within the first 5 minutes of the game. So.
Wait, is that real?
I don't know.
Oh my god. Well, now I'm excited. Okay. My pick for next time, which I've talked about a few times already, is a video game that is my current favorite and has been my favorite for a long time.
Is it Black Ops 2 or 3?
Yeah,
I don't remember.
Yeah, I hate you. It's called The Last of Us. It's a Naughty Dog game that's very, very good, and I'm not going to say more than
that. Is it bad if I haven't played the other Us games?
So now let's talk about what we're actually going to do.
I've never heard of it.
Well, no. Now we're going to talk about our actual picks for next time because Bobby's full of shit and we're not really going to get to his. So let's talk about what we're doing next time for reals.
Oh, fuck you. my pick is a film that I thought you watched, but I guess you haven't watched it. So I'm picking it. It's one of my favorites. It's directed
by... If this is Set It Up, I am actually vetoing it.
it's a quirky romantic comedy directed by Jeremy Saulnier. It is a love story starring... no, I'm kidding.
I don't know who directed Set It Up, so I couldn't tell if you were kidding or not.
It's the opposite of a love story.
Okay.
It's a film called The Green Room.
Oh, yeah. Okay.
It stars Anson Yelchin and Imogen Poots, right, and Alia Shawkat and, right, Patrick Stewart.
Tommy Wiseau. James Franco. Brie Larson.
Brie Larson. Yeah. And America's sweetheart, Jacob Tremblay. So, cool. It is about Patrick Stewart
trying to get past being known as Brie Larson, right,
in a room, and he just keeps yelling.
Should we keep yelling room jokes over each other, or are we satisfied with our level of comedy here?
It is about a punk rock band. The members of which are Anson Yelchin, Alia Shawkat, Callum Turner, the other guy, and they.
Oh, that's right, Anton Yelchin's in it.
It's one of his last films.
I still want to see Thoroughbreds. So
incredibly great in it.
Man, that was a sad one.
But they wind up playing a gig at like a neo-Nazi compound, and then things really pick up for them there.
Okay.
It's really happy, really good things happen.
Yeah, sure.
They
meet
great fortune, and it's not.
And it's incredibly a super funny, nice, relaxing movie.
Yes.
Cool.
Love can happen even in the most adverse, awful situations.
My pick for next time is I've had a collection of top 10 TV shows my whole life that's always moved around a lot. I think the three constants on that list have always been Breaking Bad, The Wire, and The Sopranos. And Bobby has never seen The Sopranos, which I guess I knew and kind of forgot about. I've been rewatching it recently. I'm almost done with the series again. I've watched it. I think this is my third time. It is one of the most psychologically interesting shows in the history of television. I have a chip on my shoulder about it because a lot of stupid people watched it for stupid reasons because they wanted to see mobsters kill each other, and I don't at all think that is the point of the series. I think it's a beautifully created commentary on the human condition and morality, and it's great. So I'm going to pick two episodes of that series. I have a list of eight, by the way, so we have lots of time before we run out of Sopranos episodes for Bobby to finally fucking finish playing Last of Us. We're going to be watching what I think are two of the best standalone episodes. They're fairly self-contained. One of which is that... Why are you looking at me like this? You have a really, really mischievous smirk on your face.
It's just my face.
I don't believe you at all. Bobby's doing something that I don't trust. I think this show does a really, really good job at strange comedy. It's got a Fargo-esque element to it at times. It really plays with kind of the absurdity or surrealism of reality that the characters are in. Yeah. And the first one, I think, is a perfect kind of example. It does not take place in the Midwest, Bobby's stupid. Of the comedy of that show, which is an episode called Pine Barrens, which focuses on two of the side characters and an adventure they're having. The other one we're going to watch is one of the more dramatic, intellectually stimulating, kind of philosophical episodes about an aspect of humanity. And this one is about faithfulness in a relationship. It's about infidelity. And Tony and the people in this subculture that he's a part of, infidelity is a part of their lives. And the second episode is really, really heavily about that in interesting ways. It is called In Camelot.
Okay.
So, yeah.
I look forward to doing those in two episodes after we do our video game
episode. So we'll be back in a couple of weeks to talk about Sopranos and whatever the fuck Bobby talked about. And I'm sure in like a year or so, we'll talk about video games and it'll be good. So,
can I mention a thing I forgot to mention during our blockers
discussion? No.
Okay.
No, go ahead.
Okay, so the young actor who plays Leslie Mann's daughter's boyfriend.
Okay.
He is in one of my favorite episodes of Riverdale.
All right, so we'll talk to you guys next time.
You'll see him there.
All right, thanks. That was fun. I'm going to go kill myself. Bye. You're